In today's podcast, I talk to the queen of luxury loungewear, Olivia Von Halle. Almost 10 years ago, Olivia launched her eponymous brand, inspired by the chic silk pajamas worn by Coco Chanel. And now, her label is an international phenomenon, synonymous with uncompromising luxury and an ability to blur the lines between nightwear and ready-to-wear. Olivia Von Halle is sold by over 100 of the world's most prestigious retailers, including, of course, Crown Palace. I'm Louise Duffy, and this is the Crown Palace Podcast. Olivia, thank you so much for joining us on the Crown Palace Podcast. How are you?
I'm good, thank you so much. Yeah, I'm in London, and it's a beautiful day here this morning, and yeah, feeling good, but slightly nervous about all the new lockdown things that Boris has just
brought. I know. Today.
So, oh God, glad I went to Ibiza when I had the chance.
I know, this is it. We're all looking back and thinking, thank God, or kicking yourself that you didn't. So at least you got a little break. But yeah. What's like, you've a busy house, you've got little ones and running this crazy business, which is just so wonderful to see. So it must have been very busy. Lockdown wasn't a break for you.
No, it was the exact opposite of a break. I've been very, very lucky in that I've always had quite a bit of help at home. And yeah, the hardest thing, and also in some ways the most amazing thing about lockdown, was that we lost our nanny who helps us out every day, and we lost our cleaner and our dog walker, which I know I'm so privileged to have. But yeah, suddenly business was absolutely booming, and I had my two kids to look after full time, and the dog sort of desperately wanting to go out the whole time. And yes, so it was very, very full on, but it was amazing to spend so much time with my family. So I absolutely really loved it.
And there are these times when you're when it's all gone and it's just you and the family, you know, there were special times in it, really, weren't there?
Absolutely. Yeah, I was really lucky that we got out of London. I grew up on a farm in Kent, and we sort of, before lockdown happened, myself and my sister and her family and my little brother, we all kind of moved down to my mum and dad's, and so we had 11 of us all down there.
That's a good bubble.
Oh my God, it was quite full on. It was, yeah, the youngest I think was 4 months, and then the oldest was my granny, who was 90, so it was real like cross-generational living. But it was a very special time in a lot of ways, and
you'd
very
never,
difficult in other ways.
I know, but you'd never get that opportunity again. No. So as you say, business booming, lockdown. I mean, your business was growing so fast before lockdown, but then lockdown happened and we are in the midst of a pajama sales boom, and we're all seeking those home comforts, like be it like making our house a little more cozy or making better dinners, but our sleepwear became very, very important because we started to live in it. So what have the last couple of months in business, in your business, been like?
I think at first, we, like all business owners, we were just so, so nervous about what was going to happen. And we had no idea, were we going to need to furlough staff, and what were we going to do about our offices? And we were just in kind of crisis management mode. And actually, the sort of boom didn't really happen for 2 or 3 weeks after lockdown started. Mm-hmm. And I think initially everyone was kind of feeling the same, like not wanting to spend any money and really just kind of nervously watching the TV all the time and seeing what was going to happen. And then I think people kind of relaxed into it, and suddenly they started doing lots of like family quizzes on Zoom, and saw friends and family starting to kind of bring out their best pajamas. And I think for us that was like, once people suddenly something kind of clicked, and sales just went absolutely through the roof. I think at one point we were up 700% on our previous month, which I think was in April or May, which like normally would be a really quiet month for us. So yeah, it was kind of crazy, but yeah, we felt very, very lucky. And I've had friends and family who've lost jobs, and So it's, I don't know, it's mixed feelings, you know.
Yeah.
I would rather we weren't in this situation.
Of course. Well, how did you manage that then? So if sales had increased by 700%, but yet, you know, staff were working from home and obviously your supply chain was, you had to be adjusted given travel restrictions. How did you manage that? How did you manage that increase and that increased demand?
I think we were really lucky because we just delivered a new collection in February, and we had gone, sales were already increasing. So we'd kind of been pretty optimistic in our ordering, and we were very lucky that we'd ordered a lot and that basically we had enough to see us through. And I think, our new collection is launching in a couple of days now. So the last couple of months have been harder because we've pretty much sold out of most things on our website. But in some ways, it's very good as a business to do that and to sort of run. I think so many businesses right now have got a real glut of stock. And we're very lucky that actually like global sort of levels of OVH are pretty low and everyone is desperate for new stock, and it does give the brand it keeps people really, really wanting it, which I think is good. So yeah,
it must be a mixed feeling then when you see sold out but yet you know the demand is still there. Obviously you're delighted that it's selling so quickly and so well, but you've got customers kind of screaming for it.
Yeah.
So it must be a funny kind of feeling as the founder of the business.
Yeah, it is. And I think it's also, I suppose, because of my role in the business is very much on the creative side, we're working so far ahead. So it's, I'm not as sort of involved in the kind of day-to-day situation of like where our sales are at. We're all, me and my and the design team are all working on, we're doing like our collection for next summer now. Sort of finishing up that and starting Christmas collection for next year. So we're sort of so far ahead that, yeah.
So did you ever envisage, so luxury sleepwear is the core of your brand, but did you ever envisage a time when you'd be dressing somebody for the Emmys like Samira Wiley or Kerry Washington and be wearing your pajamas on Good Morning America? Like, it must be crazy to see all that's happened.
Oh, it's so cool. It is really, really crazy. And it's not, I mean, obviously, it's like every designer's dream, but you never think that it will happen in the way that it has. I think we had Angelina Jolie attend a premiere in her bed with her dog in her pajamas.
Fabulous. A
few weeks ago as well. And it was amazing seeing Samira Wiley in our, Leela Zebedee. She looks incredible in them. And it's been absolutely amazing and so such fun for us to kind of, you know, be in touch with all these mega Hollywood stylists and bring on the Oscars, I say.
Absolutely. Oh my God. Imagine the demand for your brand then. But you've worked with Angelina Jolie before. You've collaborated with Disney. What was that process like?
I mean, Disney's an absolute, it's an enormous juggernaut of a corporation, and it was very interesting. We're just a small British brand that I've only got like 16 employees in head office, so it's we're not like comparable in any way. But it was amazing being able to work with them on we did a collaboration for Maleficent, the second Maleficent, which came out last year, and it was incredible being able to work closely with Angelina Jolie. I've never met her before, but I spent some time with her on set in her trailer, and that was really
surreal, I'd imagine.
Really surreal because she was wearing her full Maleficent costume.
Oh wow, that's an intimidating look. Okay, you're gonna take her seriously.
Oh my god, yeah. So she had like the amazing horns and all the prosthetics, but then over the top to keep her warm she had like a pink fluffy dressing gown and pink fluffy slippers.
Oh, that's too much.
It was really surreal, but she's so kind and funny and relaxed, and it's weird how very quickly someone stops being like a mega A-list celebrity and just becomes like a normal person that, you know, you're working with and you're chatting to. And
yeah.
So no, it was really
the collection
cool.
was beautiful. My God, it was just, it was a work of art.
Absolutely. Thank you.
So tell us, okay, so the demand for comfort obviously has increased given our new circumstances, but when did you spot, you're almost 10 years in business. So pre that, you spotted this need for luxury loungewear in the market. Did you just feel it was a neglected sector of the market, or how did you decide to fill this gap?
So I was living in Shanghai at the time. My husband and I met really young, and we sort of immediately knew we wanted to get married. So I think, you know, we kind of met at 23. I was like married to him by 24. He's actually even younger than me. And we kind of went off to Shanghai, and I was a trend forecaster at the time. And I've always, ever since I've been quite like a young girl, I've suddenly had like very kind of strong instincts about things that I want to wear which is sort of all part of being a trend forecaster, really. But I suddenly became completely and utterly obsessed with silk pajamas. And I had this amazing tailor at the time, and he made me a pair. And I mean, I just wore them all the time. There was something that felt very sort of fresh about them.
What did they look like?
I mean, they looked exactly like our Leela pajamas now. So, you know, just, I mean, really, that pajama hasn't changed. That was sort of the original one. So they were in beautiful printed silks. And I wore them to my 25th birthday party, and I walked the dog in them. And like, mainly we were partying a lot at the time. We were young and we had this great apartment, and we would go out to nightclubs and bring back half the club, and we would all sort of stay up all night and out on our balcony, probably driving our neighbors absolutely mad. but I would kind of come home wearing some, you know, ridiculous sort of, you know, very tight outfit with huge high heels, and I would put my pajamas on and dress them up with like fun jewelry and kind of party the night away. So I think at the time there's just something that felt very kind of fresh about them, in that at the end of that decade, it was sort of 2008-2009, it had been, you know, the decade of bodycon and Hervé Leger dresses and Christian Louboutin shoes, and suddenly wearing something that was actually like, you know, not very form-fitting, that was really kind of sort of comfortable and modest and covered up. It just felt really new, but also sort of felt like decadent and loose. And I realized that pajamas were going to be a thing, because I'd had this very strong gut feeling about them. And I did some market research and found there was just absolutely nothing like them available. And of course, a few people were doing silk pajamas, but they were rather sort of like a real sort of afterthought in people's collections. They hadn't really kind of gone back to the basics and thought, you know, right, what would people want from a pair of silk pajamas, like, at this point?
And the customer probably wasn't investing in that way, you know, like, typically we buy for others to see and to appreciate, but you know, it's only recently I noticed, like, myself and my friends, we are kind of investing in ourselves and those clothes that actually only the closest to us will see. How did you start to build that customer base from 10 years ago, that of people who were ready to invest in, you know, what they only wear at home for the most part?
I suppose when we started off with a very luxury customer, I suppose for some women, spending that amount on a pair of pajamas isn't a big deal. And so I imagine that she was our sort of first customer, someone who just, you know, loved the product and the price wasn't a consideration, and she just kind of, you know, went for it. And then after that, I would say our biggest customer is someone who's being given them as a gift. For that person, they're probably like their one big present that they're going to receive, maybe from their parents or their husband. I think that's sort of really how it started. Was people being given them, because they do have this quite unique giftability is such a horrendous word, but
they do. It's something. I think a good gift is something that you probably won't buy for yourself, but you would love, and that's what those pajamas are. You know, for many people, it's such a treat. You know,
Yeah, definitely. And it's quite, and it does have this very unique sort of, they have like this unique place, I suppose, because it's something that you can give to your daughter, your mother, your sister, your boss's wife. Like you really yeah. can give them to absolutely anyone. And they seem to, they just sort of have this remarkable, like cross-generational appeal. And often men will come into our shop and we'll just buy Olivia von Halley for every single person in their family.
And the job is done. It's perfect. Yep. Yeah. So what was life like at the start back then? So almost 10 years ago now, when you launched this label, you obviously had to do it all to start, 360 role.
Yeah, I mean, I completely did the whole thing for the first, I think probably the first like or year, 2 years. It was absolutely crazy. I've never worked so hard in my life, but it's amazing when you're building something for you. And it's quite strange for me to think back now on that time, because I now have such an incredible team and I rely on those people so heavily. And my job is nothing like it was back then. But in some ways, back then was so much more exciting, because every day was a new challenge and you're always learning something new. And you would sort of go into work and be like, right, I need to figure out how to, I don't know, like import 500 pairs of pajamas in the UK. Okay, how am I going to go about doing this? And in some ways, I loved all of that learning.
And it has probably made you stronger now, because you had to do it all. So now you have a team around you, but you know what they have to do too. You know, it's not like you had this ready-made team to start. So I think it probably gives you a better grounding in your business.
I think it definitely does for the first few years. Yeah. And I would say up until, I don't know, kind of four or five years ago, I knew everyone's role as well as they did. And I remember finding it terribly exciting the first time I walked past the printer and I saw something coming out that I didn't know what it was.
Wow.
I was like, what is this? What's this person doing? It all kind of felt very like exciting. But I have to say now, especially with technology and with digital marketing and with the operational side of the business having grown so much, that there is now so much of the company that is a bit beyond me.
Right.
And
but that you have to almost relinquish that control to grow, don't you?
Yeah, definitely. I think I probably was a bit of a control, not control freak, but I was a real workaholic right up until the moment when I had Hero, my son, in 2016. Like I was still in the office at 8:30 the night before he was born, and he came by C-section 12 hours later.
Oh my God.
It's quite mad when I look back on it, but I really didn't know how the business was going to survive without me, which so egotistical, but actually like not only did it survive, but it thrived. And actually me removing myself from the situation for a couple of months was actually incredible, because it gave everyone the opportunity to do what I'd done and like make their own mistakes and figure out their own best way of doing something. And actually I came back to a company that was not only a lot better organized and had a lot more structure, but also was like profitable for the first time.
Right. Okay. So having babies is a good plan.
Now when I go off and he's like, oh, thank God we can make some money, because you're not here spending it all.
Oh, wow. And so talk to me about, I really want to hear what life is like as a trend forecaster, but I do know that when you left that job, you declared that you would never work for anybody again.
Oh, oh my God.
Which I think is amazing. Like, but do you think that there is an element of manifestation or visualization? Is that vital for somebody to become as successful as you have?
I completely, completely believe in
visualization.
In visualization. There's an amazing book called Creative Visualization, I think it's called.
Yeah.
I think it's something that a lot of people do naturally. I think it's so, so important, especially as women, to be really, really, to try and be as in tune with your gut as you can. And I very much see your gut as having a completely different role to like your heart or your head. I think your gut and your intuition, you have to trust those kind of those instincts. And in our business, we make a lot of decisions, often purely based on my instincts. And it's something that my team are quite amazing about going along with, when actually I often I'll just say, I don't know, I just, this doesn't feel right, I don't want to do it. Or I'll say, yes, this feels I'm totally behind this. I really want to do this. And it's just because something feels right. And I think that that's so, so important. It's all very well looking at spreadsheets and, but this is like a brave new world that we're all in. With the internet, with technology, even with COVID, and I think no one actually knows the right thing to do. So I think the best thing to do is to kind of obviously like take advice, but ultimately, if you're a business leader or whatever you want to say, then to follow your gut is like the most important thing. And I do really believe in like manifesting and in very much like thinking about what you want. Like I'm quite good at setting myself like long-term goals for things I really, really want for the business. And I find that when I write it down and I start to focus on it, weird things happen where I happen to meet people. My sales director always says that like the stars always align for us in some way.
Yeah.
And I think it, I don't know, I'm quite a spiritual person.
That's amazing. I think we probably, because we live in such a busy, noisy world, be it virtually or with social media, we may not give ourselves enough time to think and to allow ourselves to think and to plan. You know, there's an awful lot going on in our lives. So I think that to give yourself that time and to set yourself that goals is vital and obviously very, very fruitful for you too. What was life like as a trend forecaster? Tell me what a trend forecaster does. Obviously the clue is very much in the name, but what do you do?
Oh God. Well, I always feel like a bit of a phony talking about this because I actually only did it for a couple of years when I was straight out of uni, because I set up my company when I was 26, I think.
Yeah.
So I did work for a couple of amazing agencies. I work for the Future Laboratory and for WGSN, which are like two of the biggest players. So a trend forecaster, they basically, I think now the word trend forecaster has slightly gone out of fashion, and they tend to say now consumer insight. Basically, a good trend forecaster will, I think the best way of saying it is like be able to see the beauty in things that other people think are ugly. It's like, you can be a trend forecaster in a lot of different areas. So I have like no trend forecasting abilities in like music or, I don't know anything about it. I'm not interested in it. But when it comes to like fashion or youth trends, I don't know, I feel like a bit of a sponge. Like I can sort of soak up what's going on around me, and I can, I think some people have a ability to live that little bit further ahead than others and sort of see what's going to be big before it is, basically.
So while the rest of us, for example, are saying, you know, oh, the ugly sneaker trend of never, and now they suddenly appear in people's wardrobes, even though they vow that they wouldn't, or like the chunky boot, like, so you're the person who is ahead of that saying, just go for it. So you, like, you're, other than your own brand, you must be just so on top of things in your own wardrobe.
I don't know. I think also it's probably a skill that you start to lose as you get older. I mean, now I've got two kids and another one on the way, and the amount of time I have for like, you know,
planning that wardrobe,
side of things is like massively diminished. And I think I've just become so much more kind of practical. And, you know, as I've got older, and I, you know, you settle into your style and you know what works for you, and you don't really have time to, I mean, I don't know if you do.
No.
But
They change everything, don't they? So you have Hero and Chaos. I absolutely love that. And does he live up to his name, Chaos?
poor thing. I know. He's at 18 months now, and he's just at that really destructive phase, and, you know, just opens every cupboard and pulls everything out. And I keep finding myself telling him off, being like, Chaos, no, don't do that.
I'm so, like, just living up to my name, Mum.
So stupid. I don't know. I love, I'm very into like numbers and letters and kind of how they look on the page. And I'm very into, I don't know, things being like five. I don't know. I'm very into the numbers 3 and 5. And I love it that Chaos is a five name. And I love the way the letters all fit together. It's bizarre. I don't know.
It's beautiful. Yeah. But two boys. I somebody said to me when I was having my little girl, boys will wreck your house, girls will wreck your head. So yes. you're gonna have it all going on very soon. So let's talk then about the garments and tell us what is so special about them. I mean, Where do you source your silks? What is that printing process like?
Yeah. So our silk all comes from China, which actually I think is something that a lot of people don't know, is that basically all silk is made in China. So even when people talk about Italian silk or about French silk, like it's still actually the actual grage is still being sourced from China, and then it's finished in machines, in like special machines that they only use in Italy or France or whatever. So because of the time that we spent in Shanghai, all of our silk is still, it comes from there, and we still manufacture out there. And I suppose what sets our pajamas apart from other pajamas on the market is the weight of the silk that we use is quite special. It's 19 mummy, which isn't used that much because it is a little bit heavier. It's more expensive, but it does have this really beautiful drape, and it just kind of skims over any like little lumps or bumps. It's much more flattering. And then we use a really old fashioned silk printing process which is silk screen printing, which actually a lot of people did at school. Do you remember like cutting those screens and then you put the, I don't know if you guys did it, and you put the.
I don't think we did anything as that in where I went. But it sounds beautiful.
Yeah, it's very like, so it's all completely hand done. So I don't know, if you take one of our silk pajamas that's maybe got a floral print on it, it might have 16 colors. And so each one of the screens, they're about, I don't know, a meter squared. Each of the screens has been applied 16 times to that meter of silk, and then a different color laid on. So that you get this amazing kind of saturation of color. So if you look at the other side of the pajama, the color comes completely through.
Beautiful.
Whereas if you look at a digital print, it tends to sit on the top of the fabric. If you look at the underside will be very pale. And you can also see almost like lines in digital printing, which I hate, which is why we do this old school method. You just get this lovely, you sometimes get like a little bit of misregistration as well, where the screen's slightly shifted. And I really like that. I think it makes it feel just, I don't
more
know.
Unique, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I love that.
And let's talk about, you're so well known for your fabulous prints. So where does your inspiration come? I know that travel has always been a big part of it. Now we're not traveling. Where are you finding your inspiration now?
Yeah, it has been hard because we used to spend an awful lot of time really in the library, actually. I've got an amazing design director who I work with very closely on the design process, and she loves going off to the library and spending like 3 days in there. We tend to, I think we love like storytelling, and we often sort of find characters like unknown, amazing, strong kind of female characters that we want to tell the story of. So for last Christmas, we did a whole thing around Donyale Luna, who was the world's first Black American supermodel. And she lived in the factory with Andy Warhol, and she was this amazing kind of creative free spirit, but wasn't very recognized for her work. And she was amazing. So we kind of designed we create mood boards and like build out a whole world. So for her, yeah, we it was a sort of reimagining her then in this like kind of Hieronymus Bosch world, who was like a 16th century Flemish painter. So all quite sort of mad, but yeah.
That's amazing. And do you just find an individual like that? And I bet once you kind of delve into their world, the inspiration just flows. It must be really exciting to come on something and know that you're going to base your story on that. I think that's really, it's an amazing part of the process.
Yeah. No, it's wonderful. And it's definitely like one of our kind of most favorite parts about the design process is that research. And then it's also really fun being able to tell the story with the shoot. And
And so we talk to founders all the time on the Brian Thomas podcast, and very often the breakthrough moment then comes via a celebrity endorsement. Mm-hmm. Can you pinpoint your breakthrough moment?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. It was very early on. I think we've probably been going for, I don't know, under a year. And David Beckham was photographed. It was a very quiet news day. And it must have been about, I don't know, the 20th of December or something. And David Beckham was photographed or some, I don't know, someone has seen him in Harrods buying our pajamas for Victoria. And I think at the time, I mean, now, yeah, I think people have become more used to the idea, but I think at the time spending £400 on a pair of pajamas seemed completely and utterly outrageous. And the whole story was, you know, what do you buy for the woman who has everything for Christmas? Oh,
perfect.
And it just went completely mad. Yeah, it was in every single newspaper, and then it went global, and it was on E! News. And I was just working out of our little like box room in our house at the time, and the phone was ringing off the hook. We were freaked out. We didn't really know what to do. We had all these journalists calling us, and yeah, it was amazing. And actually, it's been really sweet because he's stayed a customer, and I think he's bought them for her for Christmas every year since he comes and talks.
Oh, how fabulous. And so, I remember as well when you launched the Missy tracksuit, it was just on every supermodel getting off. There was nobody flying to Fashion Week here, there, everywhere that wasn't walking off the plane in the Missy tracksuit. All the Hadids. Has there been anybody in particular that has really sparked, other than Victoria Beckham, that has really sparked interest?
I suppose in America, it's because America is our biggest market by far. Yeah. And in America, it's been, Selena Gomez has worn our things a lot. The Hadid sisters have a lot. Jennifer Lopez has been amazing. She wore the Missy tracksuit, I think, on like her 49th birthday, which is kind of amazing because she'd had it for a year. So that's always really exciting when you see big celebrities who could wear something different every day of the year. Re-wearing things, and I think that gives me I really love that, because then you know you've created a product that actually is really solid and is really good and has a really strong place in people's wardrobes and is like serving a purpose. I really love that, rather than people just wearing things just, you know, to get photographed in.
Exactly, in that fleeting moment, but it's a staple of their wardrobe. So what's the team like? What is your team like? I know you said it's grown to 16 in your head office. What's the formation of the team like?
I've got an amazing team. Most people have been there for a long time now. Like my sales director was my first employee, and she's been there for 9 years, I think, 8 or 9 years. And then my designer's been with me for 7. I've got a lot of people who've been with me for like 5 or 6 years. I think we're a very kind of close team. It's been really hard for everyone, all being separated with Corona and all having to work from home. Everyone's really missed each other. They normally all go out together a lot. They're all great friends. We have like quite legendary Christmas parties. We don't know what we're going to do without this year.
God, it's just a wait and see. It's really tough, isn't it? There's no plans that can be made, but I'm sure you pulled something out of the bag. since the inception of the brand, then it's almost 10 years. What has been the best business advice you've received?
I think so often people, I see it a lot with people getting in touch with me wanting advice on businesses. And I think it is really important to go out there and talk to a lot of people about your business and to get advice. But at the same time, like, if you take on all the advice you're given, you're going to end up with a product or a business that doesn't make anyone happy. I think you really need to believe in your own vision, and it may be something that people haven't seen before, but that's good. Like, it needs to be original. You need to take risks, and you need to follow your gut, basically. So I would always say, you know, listen to advice, but follow your gut.
And that's so clear in you through this conversation. You know where it's going. So where is it going next? What's the plan?
We've really kind of refocused on kind of solidifying our position as like the go-to for luxury nightwear and loungewear. And I think with everyone spending more time at home, like, we're really expanding our cashmere collection. We are going to start to do slippers. That's really exciting.
Oh, lovely.
So yeah, they'll be coming out Christmas next year. Really beautiful, kind of velvet embellished slippers. I'm really excited about those. And we've got we're working on a new cotton collection as well. Like, very lightweight silk cotton that's perfect for for summer holidays. And so, yeah, I'm excited about all the new products that we're doing.
You just have that niche in the market that you are the go-to. And I'm so glad you're going to have a little girl, actually, because it would be a shame if you didn't have a girl to share all this with.
I know.
It's so exciting. So that's what's happening. 2021, you're going to really, we're so excited to see what's to come into Brand Thomas. And for you, thanks. It's going to be a busy couple of months. So thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today.
Thank you so much, Louise. It's been lovely to chat.
A pleasure. And thanks a million. And like we say, really excited to see what comes through the doors from Olivia Von Halley. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Brand Thomas podcast. If you like what you've heard, be sure to subscribe and share and follow us on Official Brand Thomas on Instagram for more updates.